All right, to kick it off, hour number two, the home team is presented by Athens Technical College. Your passion, your future elevated.
Just 2 hours today. Got the Dogs and the Gamecocks tonight.
Yes, Georgia and South Carolina on the hardwood.
Got my buddy Mike Morgan's calling the game tonight, and he's got us tuned in.
Oh, excellent.
On 960 The Ref, so we love Mike.
Well, let's start today's 5 at 5, brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution, with a little bit of talk about tonight's game, Jeff. Georgia and South Carolina, unbelievably, the Dogs have not beaten the Gamecocks in basketball since the SEC tournament of 2016.
You're talking about Kentucky, right?
South Carolina. Oh. Who have been to as many Final Four since then as Kentucky, have they not?
Very true. In fact, they beat – who they beat to get there?
Florida, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
The Elite Eight in Madison Square Garden, just as it was drawn up. Florida and
Duke
South
and
Carolina.
Kansas, right? Nope. Florida and Gamecocks.
It's six in a row the Gamecocks have won in this series. Can Georgia get up off the mat again after a brutal loss? Blow a 20-point lead on the road to Missouri, came home, beat Texas A&M, blow a 22-point lead on the road to Florida. They lost again Saturday in brutal fashion in overtime. They score 102 points and lose to Alabama. So can this team get up off the deck again and maybe finally win a game? They've been so – well, they did beat Texas A&M, but three of their last three losses, though, have all been games they've had.
Yes, Georgia can. Georgia's good enough to – this team's good enough to have a 22-point lead in the O-Dome, right?
Yes.
Here's the problem. What happens if Georgia's up by 10 points in the second half? At some point, you got to finish, or it just comes back in your head. Oh, my God, are we going to have another lead get away? I mean, it's one thing to have it happen once, but to blow two 20-point leads and then to be up 10 or 12 on Saturday and have that get away – so what do you, and obviously Tom Crean's going to go out there. This team's going to try and get a lead and hang on to it. You almost feel like, well, would they be better off coming from behind and winning? Because that is that's a big monkey on the back, just having these leads. Because the thing is, this Georgia team is talented. I mean, we could easily be 5-5 or 6-4 right now in the league. We should have beaten Ole Miss here. They were winless in the league.
They've gotten it cranked up.
I know.
They're an interesting team all of a sudden. They go to Kentucky Saturday. They'll be catching double digits there.
Yeah, take Big Blue. They've got a bad history up there.
Who doesn't?
I know. So even if the Ole Miss game, which that game worried me too, because that was the first game after the five-game stretch to start the year that was so tough. Like, all right, here's a game we're quote-unquote supposed to win.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just having those big leads get away, it's tough to overcome that psychologically.
Yeah, the Gamecocks have they lost their first two games in conference play. Since then, they've beaten Kentucky. They've won at Arkansas, which is a good win. And they've beaten Missouri, Texas A&M twice, and then also Vanderbilt. So they've beaten the three worst teams in the league a couple times.
But you have to give Frank Martin credit. They tend to always play good in the league.
They do, and they...
Because last year, weren't they one of the top four seeds?
Yes, even though they
barely had a... Maybe were 500 overall.
Right at 500 at the best.
Like maybe 17-16.
But they picked up the double bye.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah, their overall record last year was 16-16. They were 16-15.
Went to the net.
And then went 11-7 in the SEC, and then they lost to Auburn and... on Friday. They didn't play till Friday of the SEC tournament, despite a record of 16-15 overall.
So they didn't even go to the net.
No, they didn't go to any postseason.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they play well in the league. And this year, they had back-to-back wins against Clemson and Virginia, both on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And Virginia's the defending national champs, but they're borderline not making the tournament this year. Although, did you see last night? They win 50-49 in a game that went to overtime. They made one shot basically over the last 11 and a half minutes of the game.
God.
All they hit in overtime were three free throws, and that was good enough to win by one.
Who'd they beat? Doesn't matter.
It might have been.
Somebody scored 2 points in overtime.
It was Notre Dame.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, it was Notre Dame.
They fall it off, too.
Yeah.
Remember the Kentucky team that was undefeated. Notre Dame had them, so that would have been 2015 when Duke won the national title. Remember, Notre Dame had Kentucky beat in the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
Man, they have.
Yeah, they've kind of plummeted, and I know Virginia's that. I mean, you have to win the national championship there. Otherwise, that basketball is unwatchable.
It's unwatchable. I mean, to me, it's a bad thing for the sport that they won it playing that style.
Every one of their games last year was great, though. In the tournament. They should have lost every round except the second round. Whoever they played, I don't remember who it was.
It was 83 NC State all over again.
Yeah. But remember, they were losing at the half to their 16 seed.
And they're thinking, here we go again. Purdue had them.
Auburn.
So much so that they were rolling Toomer's Corner already.
Yes. Auburn had that loss coming, though, for that 2013 football season. Yeah, so Georgia and South Carolina tonight. The Gamecocks are just a weird team, though. They won those games against Clemson and Virginia and then lost their next game at home after that to Stetson. They've also lost at home this year to Boston University.
Whoa.
Yeah. But they've beaten Kentucky.
So by the process.
And they've won at Arkansas, and that's a good win, too.
The process of transference, Boston University can make a case there. You know, top five national team.
Yeah. That Stetson loss is the real head scratch. I mean, to beat Clemson and Virginia back to back and then go home and lose to Stetson.
And Boston U. I mean, that's the type of stuff that happens in college baseball.
Yeah. That might be.
It's a midweek game.
Yeah. Like, didn't Georgia lose last year to LIU Brooklyn?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, South Carolina, their national championship team in 2011. They lost to Francis Marion.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a huge deal.
But I remember even Coach Tanner had texted Coach Pernell because we're going to lose tonight. Our guys don't want to be here. They had just had a big weekend series, had another one coming up,
and they had to go on the road, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
That stuff shouldn't happen in basketball at least twice in a year. Like, hey guys, we've already lost to Boston U. Let's be ready for the Hatters.
Yeah, or you've just beaten Clemson and Virginia on the road, you know. Yeah, try and beat Stetson here at home.
Stetson won here back in 2005.
In hoops?
Oh, yeah. That was one of our two-win SEC teams.
Oh, I don't remember.
That was year two of
Dennis
Felton.
I remember playing them in baseball.
Oh, yeah. That was year two of Dennis Felton. They had a young coach who went to Marist, and they came in here.
Sean McVay?
No.
Wasn't him?
His name's like Andrew something. I think. They came in here and beat us in men's basketball.
Well, they beat South Carolina, too, this year. So no shame. But Georgia and South Carolina tonight, 6:30. Coverage at 6:05. Moving on in the 5 at 5, the other hot topic. This appeared to be the midnight news dump. Because I think this was, you woke up to the news that Mel Tucker was going to be the new head coach at Michigan State, even though Mel had tweeted 4 days ago. A lot of hashtags. Build it, go Buffs, Buff Strong, all that stuff, that he was not leaving Colorado, but being a chip off the Nick Saban tree or a branch off the Nick Saban tree, he pulled a Nick Saban and adamantly denied having interest in a job and then taking that job. Mel Tucker to Michigan State. Good hire, bad hire for Michigan State, and how big a loss is it for Colorado?
I think it's a good hire for Michigan State, although, as you pointed out, they're not in a good place. Scandal, lawsuit, and the timing of D'Antonio's retirement to spend more time with the family would lead me to believe that there could potentially be another proverbial shoe to drop there. Well, maybe that's not the end of the bad news. Would you agree with that?
Well, I mean, he's been accused in some lawsuit of committing NCAA violations.
Which is never good.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if those are considered major or minor, but...
In the car.
Yeah. Oh, he went on a trip with me, but he stayed in the car. All right.
Okay.
That's good enough for us.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
And the whole thing for Colorado is going to be, can they find somebody good to replace him? I think Michigan State's... on the surface, a better job, better program, but you're also in that division with the Buckeyes, the Wolverines, and the Nittany Lions.
Mel just signed a good class at Colorado, which is pretty much, he's going to be a good a good recruiter, and I think at least for the baseline for Michigan State is he'll recruit well there.
Yes.
But it's another one of those they just unretired three jerseys at Colorado. I know they got the blessing of the families of the three players. The players who wear those numbers are going to wear patches still commemorating the players. So, but here's this guy that has no connection to Colorado whatsoever.
And the school completely sells out.
Except they're paying him $2.5 million a year. So he doesn't care about these retired numbers that they've got. But to basically just cave to some recruits who want to wear those numbers, they do, and then he up and leaves anyway.
No, I had there was a Twitter out there like, would you be all right with Herschel, Cinquich, and Trippie's numbers being? I'm like, no. What if it was 5-star? I don't care. No, their numbers are retired.
Well, and Georgia, at least, Georgia's in a good position where the guy who coaches the team went here.
Right.
But if Georgia had a coach that was just a mercenary, like most of these coaches are, and if they really wanted to get this 5-star, Herschel's might be a line you wouldn't cross, but I guarantee Cinquich and Trippie's jerseys would come out of retirement. If it came down to getting like the number one prospect in the country, and that wasn't even what Colorado was getting. I don't even know what the ratings were, but I know they signed a top 35 class, so they got a good group in.
Yeah, they did. You know what? Kind of tangenting here. One of the neat things that I think a couple of schools have done is like at Texas, like number 60, going back to Tommy Novus. Like if you're a stud, you get to wear, or like Ole Miss 38 for Chucky Mullins.
Right, yeah.
Like, so that's kind of, I mean, I like the retired numbers, but to me, that's kind of a cool thing where maybe you keep, along with the retired numbers, maybe a jersey on offense or defense. And if a guy gets to be, like, let's say, I don't know, the offensive line, I'll just say 77. And like, so Andrew Thomas, you know, after his first 2 years, like, this guy's good enough to wear the 77.
Yes, once someone's there.
Right.
Instead of, at this point, still a prospect that you don't know how good they're going to be and whether or not they might end up in the transfer portal anyway down the road.
So there was – we signed in 1982, we signed a quarterback named Jamie Harris. It was, I think, from Virginia, and he was the hot shot recruit. So, oh, boy, this guy – I mean, so much so that the great David Dukes was telling me David was on – that was his senior year at Central – he was on a visit at the same time, and David lettered at four positions. So he played quarterback, split end, punted, and held. And he was a quarterback for Coach Henderson at Clark Central. And he told me, he said, Jamie Harris, he goes, why are you thinking about coming here? He goes, what? Grew up Georgia fan. My dad was the captain of Coach Steele's. Yeah, but I mean, I'm going to be the quarterback the next 4 years. You're not even going to get to play. And he was like, well, you know, maybe, you know, I think I'll, you know, maybe I can kick or play receiver. You know, anything I can do to help us win. Jamie Harris, I don't think, made it through the second game of the season.
So he pulled a Tate Martell.
He was like, I'm going to be the guy here, and just maybe he made it through. He never played in a game.
Yeah.
And John Lastinger was our quarterback. So it's like, well, I'm sure John Lastinger's not just going to give up this job because he's been waiting behind Buck Ballew. But no, so, and again, so that's another one. I'm telling, oh, we got to get Jamie Harris. Well,
we didn't give him 34 then.
No.
I guess I wasn't retired yet, but it was on its way.
But in the end, you know, it's he wound up playing at Wake Forest.
Yeah. But
so
like you
do never give in to a recruit, and I get it. We all know the difference makers they can be. If you ever did want to have, you know, the idea then, it's like, all right, we might set aside a jersey, and hey, if you're good enough to wear that special number. But for every Andrew Thomas and DeAndre Swift, there's seven Jamie Harrises.
Well, and then even especially when the coach of your program, as many hashtags as he wants to throw out there on Twitter, he has no emotional ties to your school. The only connection is the routing number and his checking account number to his bank.
Correct.
And that's it.
That's it.
So they unretired three jerseys, and now he's gone to Michigan State, where they've basically doubled his salary. So
if Bieniemy, I don't know if his jersey was one of them unretired.
No,
because he was a great running back there.
I could look, and then one of them, it wasn't, you know, that Rashawn Salaam's jersey. Apparently, they're going to keep that retired for 19 years.
Because he won the Heisman.
He wore 19. And then he passed away. He took his own life. But so his was not one of them.
And I remember what they had, the receiver, Michael Westbrook. I would think like maybe Cordell Stewart. Remember Saul Anesi? He died, I believe. He had cancer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you would think it would be guys from that era.
Here they were. It was Byron Wizerwhite.
Oh, yeah. He was an All-American back in the 30s. Yeah.
Joe Romig, who wore 67. And then another guy named Bobby Anderson, who wore number 11.
So, Byron Wizerwhite is like an all-time college football. You know, that guy was a Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, well, somebody's going to wear 24 now. Because Mel Tucker needed to get a recruit that he's not going to coach.
So another example of numbers, I was proud. Lindsey Scott's my favorite Georgia receiver of all time, number 24. When Cassius Osborne from my hometown of Statesboro, Lindsey's from Jessup, Wayne County. When Cassius got here in 1984, he wore 24. And I'm like, oh man, he's wearing Lindsey Scott's jersey. That was really cool. You know, receiver from Southeast Georgia. And Kevin got asked, I had a guy who was a reporter for the Red and Black back in the early 80s told me a story that he interviewed Butler, and he said, well, you know, wearing number 5, that's a lot of pressure with Rex Robinson's number. And he goes, hey, that's who I want to emulate. He's my hero. He was the best. If I want to be the best, I want to look like the best. And that reporter, who's got into a very good career, told me, he's like, I knew at that point that this guy was going to be a stud.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to have that respect for that number. So that might be something, a way for schools to go. Because I always knew the thing at Texas with 60 was really good, and the 38 at Ole Miss for Chucky Mullins I thought was a really cool deal too.
Who was the I don't remember. There was a big-time guy. We were in on him too. But
Ernie Sims?
That was it. Florida State unretired Ron Simmons number to get him.
Shameful.
Yeah.
He wanted 34 here, and it was like, no.
You know, and at that point, like, Bobby Bowden had been at Florida State long enough that he felt like a Florida State guy, but in this case at, like, Colorado, like, Mel Tucker was there 1 year, went 5-7, he's unretiring numbers, and then he's leaving them.
Right.
Like, a couple days later.
So it would be funny if Bienemy got the job being a Colorado guy. Those numbers are back, retired.
Retired, yeah.
By the way, if I were hired for that job, that would be my first move.
Is to re-retire the numbers?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you tell those guys, like, all right, well, this guy wore 24, we'll give you 6, or we'll give you 42. You know, Herschel's jersey, FYI, was 43 in high school. Somebody was wearing it here, and he said, well, I'll just wear 34.
Yeah, all right. See, Herschel didn't big time someone.
Exactly.
I need that 43. All right, Jeff, moving on in the 5 at 5, continuing on the subject of Mel Tucker leaving for Michigan State, some have positioned it as an indictment on the Pac-12, that the Pac-12 now can't keep up, that Mike Leach left Washington State for Mississippi State, and now Colorado loses Mel Tucker to Michigan State, to as Michigan State just steps in there, and I guess they get rejected initially and went, well, we can't have Mel Tucker telling us no, so we'll just... Why don't you tell us what salary you want and we'll pay it?
See, that's the way these girls used to be for Brain back in high school. He would tell them no. Then, well, what can I do?
Yeah. What can I do?
Can I make your favorite meal for you? I'll pay for the movie.
Yeah.
Because, okay.
All right.
You pay for the popcorn, too?
Deal. I tell you what, I'll even pay twice what the movie theater wants me to pay.
So you're giving me cash.
Yes.
You're like Richard Gere.
Right. Exactly. And you're kind of like, never mind.
That's right.
So, I mean, I don't see it as an indictment on the Pac-12, because to me it's like, well, Colorado did that thing that I've argued in the past that...
Well, yeah, just... Well,
Mel Tucker can be replaced.
Yes,
he was a good defensive coordinator here, but right now he's a guy that went 5-7 in 1 year as a head coach, so Colorado should just step up and say, like, okay, fine, we'll pay you $5 million a year to coach us.
No, Colorado did the right thing.
Yeah, that's how I see it.
Yes.
I mean, maybe Mike Leach leaving for Mississippi State, but that even had the undertones of a guy who just as long wanted to have a crack at coaching in the SEC, too.
He did, 100%. And, I mean, Leach has got, you know, he's got the place down in the Keys. So he's wanted to get back south for a long time. I mean, he might have taken the Tennessee job.
I think he was, yeah.
Yeah. When they hired Pruitt. So, I mean, I guess you're looking at, say, lateral moves, Wazoo to MSU, and then Colorado to Michigan State.
Is Michigan State a better job than Colorado?
I don't know. They're in a tougher division.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got a little better history, I guess. But
I mean, the recruiting, is it the recruiting base any better?
Slightly. But Boulder's a cool place.
Yeah, and I,
East Lansing.
In this instance here, I mean, you completely understand it's all about money and one school stepping up there to pay them substantially more. But as of right now, I think the shape that Mark D'Antonio has left Michigan State and the fact that Mel and just had pulled in a pretty good recruiting class, I'd say Colorado is probably, if all things being equal,
right,
from a money standpoint, you'd stay there. But as we know, it wasn't. But ultimately, I don't if they were able to hire Eric Bieniemy. And then I don't see there might be a lot of things wrong with the Pac-12, but one of its schools not stepping up and paying Mel Tucker what Michigan State has decided to pay him is not one of the big problems they have.
And that's not an indictment on Mel either. That's just simply the way it is. And maybe he'll turn out to be great at Michigan State, but it goes back to, and I think what spawned this, Auburn had a men's hoops coach named Tony Battee, who it wound up, they were so glad when they parted ways with him. It was just a disaster. But year one, he goes in there, they go to the NIT. And he got, was he from UTEP? Is that right?
Yeah, and then NC State's job came open.
And then he gets this big raise, and my smart Auburn friends, including Joe Champy, who's one of the Andy Landers, Auburn's longtime women's hoops coach, advise him, like, well, just let him go. He went to the NIT and won 17 games. You don't need to triple his salary.
Yeah, he can be replaced.
He can be
replaced. Hire whoever replaced him at UTEP.
Exactly. We'll get somebody else. Well, they wound up, bumping him way up. And then within 2 years, they couldn't wait for the guy to go. I mean, even so much so, the late, great Rod Bramblett telling me they lost a game at Ole Miss. You remember this story. Like, not only did he not come over and do his post-game radio, he just walked straight out of the gym, got in his car, and left.
Well, that's not...
That's not good.
He didn't even address the team?
I don't believe so.
Wow!
That's not the first story along those lines. And I'm like, and they were begging this guy, wrongfully so, to stay. And again, it's like, hey, guy won 17 games with the NIT. We'll get somebody else.
Well, it's also one of those deals where I don't even believe he was a legitimate candidate at NC State. That's probably some agent behind the scenes just planning a story. And it works, though. It gets him a raise, but...
No, Colorado did the right thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I see that is the... Michigan State, I think, is at this point in what Mel has done as a head coach, they've completely overpaid for him.
Sure they have.
And he went 5-7 last year. Colorado will find someone else to come in. He can be replaced.
Yeah.
So, the Pac-12's got issues, but that isn't one of them. The fact that they can't keep any West Coast kids on the West Coast is the biggest issue they've got.
The biggest problem they have is at USC, the bell cow, no doubt number one historical program there, had the number 66 ranked recruiting class in the country.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
They were like a couple spots ahead of like Temple or someone.
Yeah, it was.
Or maybe even below.
That's...
The company they were keeping wasn't good.
No, it was not.
No. In fact, like last week when last Thursday when Tyler and I were here talking and we started going through some stuff, and you get like, you go on the page and they show you the top 50 schools, and then you have to click like show more.
Right. That's never a good. You don't want to be in the show more.
Well, not if you're USC.
No. It's like, yes. When you talk about a team, I think about like the team they had in 1978 that won the national championship. They shared it with Alabama despite beating Alabama that year. But anyways, like they had Ronnie Lott, and Dennis Smith, and Joey Browner. Charles White was the running back. Anthony Munoz was the left tackle. Bruce Matthews played guard.
Yeah. Now they're in the 60s.
I mean, in fact, that the 79 team, or I guess the 78 team, yeah. Like, Marcus Allen was a freshman on that team.
Yeah.
So he didn't even play.
It goes to show you, like, it feels like Clay Helton is always getting fired, but they're not firing him. But it's probably still working against them on the recruiting trail.
No, it's a killer.
Yeah.
I mean, once it's out there that you're kind of the proverbial dead man walking, there are some scenarios where coaches have turned it around, but it's few and far between. And I think especially these days, the way the recruiting goes, and it's so far out, plus it's 365 days a year now with the social media, you're always having to, for lack of a better term, put a positive spin on things.
Yeah, but USC can't.
No.
I don't have anything going for them right now, except for Graham Harrell as their offensive coordinator.
So now they're in the spot where they're using the coordinators to prop up the head guys.
Yeah. All right, the 5 at 5 is brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution.